Welcome to episode 38 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, well, it's not tonight, it's the morning.
I
get these rituals where it's like I have to do it a certain way and, I don't know. But anyway, this morning.
It's a habit.
Yes. We will be covering season 2, episode 13 of Star Trek Discovery, titled Such Sweet Sorrow. But before we get started, we want to congratulate James and his wife and their new baby.
Yay, baby!
Anyway, we missed you, James, this week, but we understand that you were busy.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get started with feedback for this episode, we got a little bit of feedback, actually, for the last episode. So we'll open hailing frequencies. And it is exclusive to LT from NC. This is an all LT from NC segment. So
nice. We've got all some, LT all the time.
Yep. So first of all, we've got two voicemails from LT. So we'll play the first. This one's a short one.
Yes, it's feedback for the Star Trek Discovery podcast. This is LT from NC, and I was just listening to the first part of the newly dropped podcast, and I don't know how I missed it, but holy crap, you're right. Tenevec's headpiece did look like a Minbari. I mean, it was very Minbari. Thanks, guys. Middle of the night, and I just had to call and tell you.
That's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, it was kind of shocking how no one picked up on that except for us.
I know. That was the first thing I thought. Like, immediately I was like, oh my gosh.
And I went back and
Delenn's twin.
And you know, I went back and watched it again and, you know, saw the cover, you know, that we ended up going with for the episode. And it's like, yeah, he looks like a long haired Minbari with you know, slightly different forehead, of course, but yeah, otherwise.
Right. A Klingon and a Minbari had a baby.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Okay, so we'll move on to his second voicemail.
Yes, this is LT from NC, and I'm calling about the Star Trek Discovery podcast. This is what I get for listening to you guys driving home. About the beefy chair, Arium, and Pike's injuries. My theory is Arium took kinetic damage, crushing damage, so and left her, you know, parts of her still intact, so she would be more likely to be able to be augmented. Pike, on the other hand, was subjected to, you know, radiation. So you get a big dose of gamma, delta, theta, whatever variety of radiation they had, and he was just so fried up that that's probably all they could salvage so that he got the beefy chair. That's just my theory. Just hit me as I was going home. Really looking forward to tonight, guys. Thank you, as always.
Well, thank you so much, LT from NC. And
I have to say, that's a very good point.
Well, yeah. And that was actually after watching it again. And I'll just, of course, play. Again, thank you for your voicemails. On the last episode. But anyway, LT, yeah, after going back and rewatching, I had it was actually while I was editing, I'm like, we never quite said, you know, why we thought that was the case. And actually I came up with a similar conclusion. So I thought, well, you know, he's just like, there's literally almost nothing to him he's somehow alive, but, you know, barely holding on. And that chamber or whatever, his chair, BP chair, is all that he can use. So, yeah, good thoughts. Great minds think alike, as they say. And he had another point that he made, and this was written. He says, this is what I get for listening before bed. When you were talking about control. When you're talking about Control and Spock on the Section 31 ship, maybe Control uses the same protocol that Starfleet uses in regarding my complaint earlier about needing a better sysadmin.
That's funny.
Yeah, they both suffer. I would agree with that. Definitely better sysadmin is required in the 23rd century. Okay.
Yeah, no doubt. Why don't they have a better sysadmin? I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows indeed?
And we will hear more from LT in the remaining feedback. So episode 13, season 2 of Star Trek Discovery is titled Such Sweet Sorrow. And I don't know if the next episode will be Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2 or if it will have its own title. I don't know. They haven't, at time of recording, they have not released what the episode will be titled. But this one is written by the co-executive producer that will be taking over, well, as co-showrunner, Michelle Paradise, and co-executive producer Jenny Lumet, and showrunner and executive producer Alex Kurtzman, and co-creator. Directed by, he is an executive producer, and he's kind of like the directing executive producer or the in-house director, Olatunde Osunsanmi. I can finally pronounce his name. The description from CBS.com is, when the USS Discovery's crucial mission does not go according to plan, Burnham realizes what must ultimately be done. The crew prepares for the battle of a lifetime as Leland's control ships get closer. It's just a question of when.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. That's TVMA with language, and it was released April 11th, 2019. And we did have some conjecture or thoughts about a spot to 47, so I'm going to wait until Mark's voicemail to cover that. So,
cool.
Ruthie.
Brian.
What did you think of Such Sweet Sorrow?
I loved this episode. I have to give it a 9.999997.
All right. Well, I'm going to give this 1,701 out of 1031. Basically, I'm going to give it a 9.999999. So 7, whatever you said.
I don't know how many nines I did.
Yeah.
All I know is it ended in a 7. I don't know why. Just for fun.
So I would say that if I have to qualify that, and I always have to, I would say winks to a mirror universe Giorgio.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I loved that so much. I was like, he just winked at her. That was so cool.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll tell you, when I first watched this episode, I thought, this is like as good as Best of Both Worlds Part 1.
Oh, man.
When I watched it again, I thought, no, it's not. And I think that this is one of those episodes that I think is the whole is stronger than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. You can definitely see some seams there where they stretch the episode out to 2 episodes. Like, for example,
I decided we didn't want to do a 60-minute episode, so we're gonna pad, and or maybe it was like a 75-minute episode, so they're like, oh, we're gonna make this 2.
Yeah. So things like, well, you know, we've only got a few minutes to go, but we're gonna spend the next 5 minutes giving a long speech or telling people how much that they love them and all of this stuff. So possibly, you know, inexplicably, a Vulcan ambassador showing up at a strange time. Like that kind of stuff. That there was some kind of padding, I think.
I thought that was cool, though.
It's cool. Yeah, but it just was one of those things. It's like, this is kind of weird. But there were some other parts that just felt a little padded. But other than that, it's like, you know, so if I looked at that as an individual thing, it's like, yeah, that's not so great. But as a whole, if you take this episode as a whole, phenomenal. And
isn't that how you're supposed to take it, though?
And that's why I didn't rate it. I didn't dock it much. All right. So let's move on to other listeners.
Okie dokie.
Brian from Hawaii. He gives it 9.9 out of 10 spoons of spumoni. And he says, wow, this was the best cliffhanger since The Best of Both Worlds. Yeah, I would agree with that assessment.
Great minds.
Yep. Well, his name is Brian, after all.
Yep, that is true. All right. Fred from the Netherlands says 10 out of 10 Enterprise Bridge nostalgic shivers. I really had a shiver when Pike entered the Enterprise Bridge.
Yeah, I kind of did too, actually. That's a good way to put it.
Yep.
LT from NC says, I give this episode a 9.0 drinks from a waterfall. He says, this episode was just a letdown for me from last week. And while it is a two-parter, it just didn't hit me like last week did. Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess because there were no Klingons that looked like Minbaris.
No Klingon Minbari love child.
Yep.
That's unfortunate. I really liked it still. Okay. Rick from Cleveland says, yet another great episode this week. I rate it 9.5 out of 10 galactic rubber bands with a martyr complex. Yes.
That was so awesome. Yep. I wrote that down, too. I wrote that quote down. Galactic rubber band with a martyr complex. Oh, whoever's writing Giorgio is
spot on.
A bang-up job.
Yeah. Makes me want that show that much more.
Mm-hmm.
Ken from Chicago says, hashtag Star Trek Discoveries, season 2's penultimate episode rating is only 8 out of 10. And I put the only in there. You didn't say only. 8 out of 10.
But that's what we think.
Well, it's like, really?
I know.
8 out of 10, really sad, really long goodbyes, despite the fact there's a ticking time clock, people, and the fate of the galaxy is at stake. But hey, keep dawdling of feelings, personal knickknacks, and whatnot.
I'm eye-rolling right now, rolling my eyes.
I think I share that with you.
Share the eye roll?
Yes.
Yep.
My eyes are rolling.
That's right, Ken. We're rolling our eyes at you like disgruntled teenagers.
Oh, Dad.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Mike in Cleveland says, in my opinion, the final rating for this episode depends greatly on Discovery sticking the landing on the season finale next week. But I'm willing to give this episode a probationary 9.5 bad ideas from Captain Giorgio for every 10 good ideas from absolutely everyone else, with the one exception possibly being the evil Borgish Captain Leland. Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. I can see that.
Yeah. Arbitrary.
Probationary.
Yeah, I know.
He's arbitrarily being probationary.
Exactly. All right. Let's move on to our yeses.
Yes.
All right.
Brian from Hawaii. He says, all visuals. The Enterprise Bridge is a perfect visual update. Seeing the Discovery next to Enterprise, wow, it's a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it has to do with the nacelles being very long, for one thing, and also the way that they're aligned.
Yeah.
They're very swept back. It's almost like tail fins. Like,
well, it was kind of like they were, instead of being like raised up the way that they always were, the way that you could see that they always were, I suppose I should say, in the original series, I think Discoveries are kind of flattened a little bit.
Yeah.
For unknown reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're, you know, just looking at my Discovery model, like you would expect. Can you see me?
Yep.
See how swept back they are? Like, I would expect if the nacelles were, say, up here, if they connected, say, here, it wouldn't be nearly as long. And listeners, I know you can't see it, but if you could just picture it in your head, the way that where the nacelles connect, it's very near the front of the nacelle, and instead of the middle, and they're also the way that the body is sculpted, like they're also, the connection is way at the back. So I think that's why the discovery is so long.
We should put a picture up of your, or you should put it, you should take a picture of your model and put it in the something so that they can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can do that.
Cool. It's like they're supposed to be aerodynamic, except for, you know, that doesn't matter.
Exactly.
That's kind of what they look like. They look like someone was thinking about aerodynamics when they designed it, not really taking into consideration the fact that such things are not needed in the vacuum of space.
Yeah, according to Eagle Moss, they had listed the discovery, and I don't think this is official, but it was at 750 meters, whereas they had Enterprise at 442 or something like that. And originally, the original designs, or at least according to Franz Joseph from like the 70s, I think, had it listed as 289 meters. And I know that we'd seen that on screen in episode one. So just regarding that, like if they keep that ratio, despite what number they use, it's maybe 60% longer, say. But that doesn't mean that it's just, I don't know if by volume it's a larger ship. I think just the way that it's laid out is longer.
Designed differently.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. Something like that.
Yeah. And Blaine, shut up, because that was all on point.
That's that was very relevant.
Very relevant. Sarek asking for forgiveness. Yeah. It's one of those things, though. It's like they're still stuck to, by having that scene, I understand why they had it, but Spock not being a part of it, they're stuck to, because there's that, I think in Journey to Babel, it had been mentioned that they hadn't seen each other in years. So it's just kind of funny that
he did say that his wishes were, I guess Spock at one point in time said to Dad, "Leave me alone."
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Because reasons.
That's right. Those are important. Reasons are important because they're reasons.
Exactly. Okay, so he continues. He says, montage of crew letters. Home was well done. Yeah, I thought it was well done.
Yeah, I like the crew writing letters down. Well, it wasn't the whole crew. I think it was just the people who said that they were going to stick with Burnham.
Well, they didn't have like Bryce or Reese. They, like, it's funny.
Well, they didn't show everyone, but no. I don't think it was meant for the entire crew. I think it was just the people who said, the people in that little area who said, "We're going with you."
Right.
Because the other people didn't need to, because they were going on the Enterprise.
True.
Right?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's what I was thinking when I was watching that. I was thinking that those people who said, "We didn't, you know, we expected that this might happen at some point in time," were basically writing a letter home saying, "Hey,
yeah,
might not see you again. If so, here's everything I wanted to say." Like when soldiers go into battle, they've got that letter home.
True.
That they leave to be sent off or something or whatever, you know.
Lastly, he says, this episode had both Jet Reno and Number One, too.
Yep.
Yep.
It was pretty awesome.
Next.
All right. Next, we have Fred from the Netherlands. His yeses are the Enterprise bridge, more than 1 minute of Rebecca Romijn, and Mihani Ikahali Kapo, plus the interaction between her and Giorgio. I agree. That was pretty awesome. I don't have to put up with Snark. I made it a rule or a law or whatever she said. That was funny.
Yep.
Although not genetically determined, Amanda cries as intense and lovely as Michael. Well, maybe Michael learned how to cry intensely and loverly as from her adopted mother.
Is that an example of Burnham discovering her heart?
Sure.
All right. LT from NC is next. He says, Anson Mount. Yes, again. The goodbye speech he delivered on the Discovery Bridge. The looks he gave Spock and the little, "If I say anything else, I'll get all maudlin" pause as he walked onto the turbolift. Come on, CBS. Give me a Pike series. You will get no argument from us. It may have been for one season, but his Pike has put him in the pantheon of captains, if he wasn't there already. I added that last part. Jet Reno, suddenly the smartest kid in the room and expositionist. Loved it when she could figure out what Poe's spoon air math was and how she managed to pop up and deliver the no spores for you message. Love bug, I think he is what she said.
What? Oh.
To
something. No spores for you, love bug.
Yeah.
The Stamets.
Yeah. No, it wasn't Stamets. No,
it wasn't Stamets. It was a yes, that's right. That's why she called him love bug.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty funny. I think that she was not suddenly the smartest kid in the room. I think she probably always was.
Yeah.
Just saying. Just throwing that out there.
The Enterprise Bridge. It was updated and shiny, and yet still had the layout we expected. Plus, I had to chuckle a little at the Giorgio Orange "ew" comment.
Me too.
I did too.
I always think that about Orange.
Yeah, more on the Orange in a minute. And he also says, just the lack of eye needles and general eye pokery.
Again, I second that. I felt the same way.
Yeah, and I saw a little bit of that episode again last week, and I was like, yeah, why did he have to go up to Burnham with that huge eye needle? It just made no sense.
I don't know, man.
All right, next.
Okay, next we have Ken from Chicago, who says, more hashtag Jet Reno. Tilly being Tilly, but not extra Tilly. Okay. I think I know what you're talking about, and I'm not sure if I am offended or not on behalf of Tilly, but I will let it slide for this time.
I think it was just the right amount of Tilly. Like, Tilly not being extremely ADD Tilly, like we saw a couple of episodes back.
I know what he was saying, but he's implying that not all Tilly is good Tilly. That's his implication there.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, tie-in of the third hashtag Short Treks episode, boosting appeal of future episodes and how they might link to season 3. I agree. Return of hashtag number 1, and Brian finally gets to see the bridge of the revisualized hashtag TOS hashtag Enterprise.
Well, thank you, Ken. I would say that it wasn't just me, but...
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah. Rick from Cleveland is next, and he says, actually, the next two are from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Reno and Giorgio. This is the buddy cop show I need in my life.
I agree.
And the biggest yes of the season, Enterprise. I can't imagine a more perfect modernization of the bridge. Such a beautiful take on the ship, and mostly a female bridge crew to boot. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And a few aliens on there, too, that we'd never seen before. And now, Rick, he had some stuff. Just so you know, Rick, you had some stuff that might have been a yes or could have qualified as a yes. And I just put them in feedback, just so you know. Anyway, moving on.
All right. Next, also from Cleveland, Mike. How wrong all those Short Trek haters were about the need to watch the Short Treks. How powerful most of the character moments. How obvious Michelle Yeoh plays Giorgio's clear jealousy of Michael's bond with Mama Burnham. Agreed.
Yep.
It was pretty clear and obvious that she was not a fan. Like, okay, we get it. You're mad that Michael found her mom. Even though that's not really the same Michael that you had a connection with, but... whatever. No one's counting, I guess.
All right. What do you have for yeses?
Oh, my gosh. I had so much stuff I had to stop writing them down because I thought, holy crap, everything is going to be a yes for this episode. So I should just calm down and stop writing things down. I thought, I mean, right out of the gate, the docking sequence was so cool and the evacuation corridors. I was like, man, that is so cool. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm not sure that I can remember a time in the past on Star Trek where we have seen a ship-to-ship evacuation like that, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it did happen and I just don't remember, but I don't remember it. So in my mind, it didn't happen.
Yeah, one not like that anyway. We've seen like ones where they've had to beam aboard, but not anything where there was... corridors set up or anything like that. We've seen evacuations to star bases which had, you know, a different kind of docking system set up. So nothing where they had to have these long corridors set up, which, quite honestly, I'd be scared walking on that.
Well, the ships are clearly docked together, and I wasn't quite sure if that was like a mid-warp docking thing that they did. It kind of seemed like that because of the way that they did it. It kind of seemed like they had to basically sync up. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they had to get the two ships in the same whatever stream or something. That they basically had to. I don't know any better way to say it than sync up because they had to just. I don't know.
Well, Discovery did this like flip over.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I had for, I don't know if I wrote it down for one of my yeses, but I did. Okay. So to me, that it goes back to this other idea that I have that they give the sense that the show continuously gives the sense of no up or down in space.
Yeah.
That they're showing you visually that there's not really such a thing as up and down.
Right.
As we are accustomed to on a planet where gravity is in play, like the only gravity that they have is artificial gravity that is generated by your ship. But the same can be said for another ship that is completely upside down from you. But to them, they're right side up. So, you know, I mean, it's just that kind of thing. When they do all of those spinny around kind of upside down, coming around shot things that they do, like when Amanda and Sarek, when their ship showed up.
Yeah.
It kind of did that whole like spin around thing and we're coming in and landing sort of a thing so that it makes it appear more that we're in space kind of a thing. So to me, that the way that they did that whole docking thing is really cool. Anyway, that was cool.
What else you got?
Tilly saying that Poe would be happy that she doesn't have to stuff herself into a cargo pallet. Pike, what? Nothing. Never mind. Oh, that was funny. And the whole, I'm Taryn, by the way, from your mirror universe. What mirror universe, Wink?
Yep.
That was really cool. That was all I wrote down, but there were more things, I'm sure.
Definitely. Well, my notes are crap for this episode, unfortunately. But
I didn't have a lot of notes either. And yeah. I don't think it's because nothing happened. I think it's just because I was too, like, just enraptured by what was going on. And then suddenly it was the next segment. And I was like, oh, I didn't write anything down.
Yeah. I mean, beyond what other people have already said, I mean, I thought that the bridge was almost perfect. Technologically, the way that it looked, the size, just everything about it, with one small exception, was perfect. And I thought that they got the seating exactly what I would expect. You know, so all in all, it looked amazing. And not just the bridge, but, you know, everything that we saw on the Enterprise looked perfect. And I hope that you've kept that set.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, because we want to see a lot more of it in either season 3 or the Section 31 series. And we kind of got a little hint that that might be the case because of what Georgiou said, more fun times.
What Pike said to Georgiou?
Yeah. She said just before the Taryn thing, she said something like, you know, more fun times to come or something like that.
I thought he said something to her about, like at the very end of the episode about, I don't know, I can't remember, about her being on the Enterprise or going to the Enterprise or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah.
And I had to question that because, you know, we didn't see that actually happened. So is Georgiou on Discovery still, or is she on the Enterprise?
Don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about. We don't know. So
I don't know, but I'm also a firm believer of just because we didn't see it happen doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Okay.
On TV shows.
And Poe, is Poe still on Discovery? I got the impression that she's still on Discovery.
I did not think that she was, but she, from what she said, it seemed like she was going to be close, I think. But okay. I don't know that she would have stayed on Discovery because Discovery is on a one-way trip to the future.
Yeah.
Basically. So.
Yeah. I may think of some other stuff, but let's just move on to our nose.
Okay.
No!
All right. Brian from Hawaii. He says, Sarek and Amanda getting to Discovery isn't believable at all. And where did they disappear?
They didn't disappear. Their shuttle left. You can see it clearly.
Exactly. Yeah. They left. So
you can see there. And I don't think that I realized that that was their ship until I saw it leaving.
Yeah. Those walkways between the ships seem unlikely features for starships. Really?
I didn't think so.
I didn't think so either.
Especially if they were basically hooked together. I mean, I don't think that that's something that you would do while under fire. Because those would be too easily destroyed. But I mean, why not? If you have two ships basically hooked up together and vacuum sealed together, basically, then why not? Pretty much all you really have to do is provide the structure and then you can force field them closed, you know?
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of what it looked like to me, is that they kind of were like this little like scaffolding kind of thing.
Yeah.
That had just been force field closed, pretty much.
Pretty much.
That's kind of what I thought. But I mean, it's a new feature that, like I said, I don't think we've seen before, but I don't see why it's unlikely. I mean, honestly, it seems to me like there are probably a crap ton of things that we've never expressly been shown before that are perfectly within the realm of believability.
Very true.
I think that's one of them. Like I said, though, not something that you would do in the middle of a firefight.
Yeah, definitely not.
Kind of, I mean, it's a little bit too fragile for that, but I don't think it's too fragile for, you know, space walking.
I would agree. Okay, next.
Fred from the Netherlands says, the lens flares, very annoying, especially if you are the one that takes the screenshots for the blog post of this podcast. Oh, gosh. Very true, Fred. I apologize on behalf of all of the people who make Discovery for the lens flares. He says, I agree with Brian's remark about Sarek and Amanda traveling to the Discovery, especially in such a tense situation. Or weren't they really there? And this was an intergalactic mind meld. I'm pretty sure they were really there.
Yeah.
But I disagree.
Well, for that matter, how would Amanda be there if it was a mind meld? Like, did she, like, I don't know, tag along in Sarek's mind?
Yeah, pretty much. He said the way that they found her, though, didn't they?
Yeah.
The Katra thing?
Yeah.
So, not that unbelievable. I mean, we've seen, if we accepted it from the first season and the way that she found him, then it has to be okay for the second season.
Yeah.
But if you didn't like it the first season, I guess you're still not going to like it. Sorry. Okay. Also, he says, all the crew members finding the time in such a tense situation to record something for their loved ones. From a storytelling standpoint, it's a nice ploy. At this point in time, I think this is where I have to point out that the Discovery spore jumped to, what was the name of that planet? Zahari or something?
Zahia,
yeah. They spore jumped to Zahia immediately and while Enterprise said, we'll get there as soon as we can. And we don't really know how long as soon as we can was. It could have been hours. Days? We don't know. All we do know is that Leland's ship was 10 minutes behind them.
Yeah.
So really, when they showed up at Zahia and started making these plans and doing all that stuff that they were doing, they had ample amounts of time to do all that stuff. So I don't think that it was necessarily, I mean, it felt like the entire episode was tense and whatnot, but I don't know that they were necessarily... Like, I don't think it was real time, I guess. Like, they only had 45 minutes to get all of this stuff done for real.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think everybody who's complaining about how they're taking all this time to do all this stuff, well, not really. I mean, if someone told you in 2 days you're going to meet XYZ destruction, would you not take 5 minutes to send out a message to your loved ones? I mean... I would, maybe no one else would, but I probably would if I had 2 days advance notice or however long. I don't know. Maybe they only had 12 hours, but still, out of 12 hours, you can't take 5 minutes to say goodbye to the people you care about who might not ever see you again. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just what I think. So that's what I have to say to everyone who is complaining about the time stuff. Like, you don't really know how much time they had. So there. Yeah, that's right.
I'll just say this.
Okay. Anyway, Fred continues. It is a weak point that they didn't decide who the captain of the Discovery will be.
Yeah.
The writers just did this for extra unnecessary tension. I would agree with that, except for I think that it wasn't necessarily for extra unnecessary tension. I think it was because maybe they haven't decided yet.
Well, that's part of it.
Well, I mean, in that case, it's not necessarily unnecessary. It's just, we don't know yet. We haven't picked one, so.
Yeah, it's like, well, let's wait until we have a showrunner, and we'll let the showrunner decide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
is perfectly logical, because what, you know, I mean, the showrunner has to be in charge of stuff, and what if you make a decision that the showrunner doesn't like? Then the showrunner has to live with it, and maybe that showrunner doesn't like it, and so they're going to leave. You kind of want your showrunner to stick around.
I would think the showrunner would know before they're made showrunner. And, you know, we should say co-showrunner, not right, showrunner.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Just in charge. The in charge people should make some decisions.
Yeah. You know, even though said co-showrunner was co-writer of this episode, and probably had some control over it. But,
right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But she wasn't at the time that this was written. So.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, written, directed, performed, what have you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, seeing what we have seen, she's done a masterful job with the episodes that she's written. I mean, I was really hard on Project Daedalus, but it truly was not a result of the writing of that episode. I thought the writing of that episode was spot on. The only problem I had, the major problem I had, was that they didn't give us more of Arium in the eight episodes prior to that.
Right.
It wasn't, believe me, that episode was almost perfect. And yeah. You only deducted it, what, 1/1000th of a point?
I really, really liked that one as well.
Yeah.
I think, too, it could be that if they have chosen an existing character, and maybe even if they haven't, they could still, it could still be a business end of Hollywood thing. Like they're in talks. Still, they haven't nailed the person down,
yeah,
or they haven't decided on contractual things like time spans, pay, all those kinds of things.
Yep, exactly.
So, unfortunately, this is still a business that we do still have real life creeping into shows, and sometimes that does affect how the actual show plays out.
Yeah,
it happens that we, you know, and we don't like it, but
yeah,
there's not that much we can do about it, so we just kind of have to.
I had this as a note too, but you make a very good in real life point here that, you know, it would be nice if they just said, look, Saru,
the new you're captain, the captain. Will be Saru.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe, you know, his agent and their agents haven't hammered anything out yet. And so they don't want to say, so that then they'll just have to backpedal later.
Yeah.
Which would be just as bad, in my opinion. So.
Or worse.
Yeah. Or worse. Or, you know, they could kill him off screen or something. That would be terrible.
Oh, that would be bad.
Stupid crap like that happens because they can't come to some kind of agreement. I don't know. You know, I mean, just, yes, I understand your frustration, but at the same time, I think we kind of have to be like, okay, well,
yeah.
In fact, we're not actually watching real life documentaries. We are actually watching a production which has implications from our real life.
Yeah. Sucks when that happens, but
yeah, it's not in fact like Galaxy Quest.
But it's worth saying that I want to bring this up in case I didn't bring it up strongly enough in previous episodes. It isn't by accident that they announced the co-showrunner at the same time that they announced that they had renewed for season 3. They knew that they had renewed for season 3, but the contracts and all of that about who the co-showrunner was probably wasn't set up, you know, wasn't all in place until
finalized.
Yeah. Cause it's the same thing we've seen happen, say with The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead and, you know, other shows that we, watch, that they don't announce a renewal until they have all the ducks in a row. And, I think the same kind of thing happens here. So unfortunately, they don't announce that Saru's captain because of contracts and because of, let's say they bring on an external showrunner, like, I don't know, say Ron D. Moore decides, you know, to abandon Outlander or whatever else he's doing and decides, you know, I'm going to showrun Discovery. And he decides, you know, screw this. I'm going to, you know, make the captain an Andorian or something.
Right.
Or
I don't like that the way that whatever is handled, I'm going to do this instead.
Yeah.
And then we're left holding the ball or whatever.
Right. Right. And for the record, I'm not suggesting that that should happen, nor will that happen. But the point being that these kind of things can change, and I'm okay with it. It's annoying, but I'm okay with it. Anyway, he's got one more no.
Okay. So he says, not a real no, but I found the scene where Leland kills everybody a bit too brutal for my taste.
Huh. It was brutal.
It was.
It also seemed like they weren't defending themselves very well.
Yeah.
Like, especially Giorgio. Like,
yeah.
Giorgio was on screen, and yet, you know, she got her ass whooped by Leland. Like, you know, didn't even really get any shots off or no kicks or anything like that. She just basically, you know, that's it.
After the outstanding showing that she had a couple episodes ago,
yeah,
maybe one episode ago or whatever, and then suddenly that,
yeah,
I don't know. I was glad that it was just a possible future.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. LT from NC, he has just the whole let's make Runaway, Short Trek, dovetail and relevant to the season bits. It was just too convenient that they end up in the one place where Poe can pull a Wesley and build the widget to save the day. To be clear, I did like that Runaway wasn't just a one-off toss-away story, but it was just a little too easy as a solution. Well, I don't know. I mean, it made sense in a way. Like,
was it convenient or planned? I mean,
well, I would have to think it was planned.
That's what I think.
Exactly.
I mean, come on. They kind of, to me, those short tracks were a bit too out there to just be crazy. And how are we going to make this fit? To me, it seems like a grandmaster plan rather than a, I don't know. That's what I think.
Yeah. All right. Next.
All right. Rick from Cleveland says, Orange.
Ugh.
I'm sorry. I have watched it probably 5 times now, and I can't find the orange.
Yes, Rick. I know your problem here. Substitute orange for red. This is a problem that I noticed, and it depended upon what screen I watched this on. So I saw this episode on multiple screens. I watch it on my phone. I watch it on my TV. I watched it on my laptop screen, and I watched it on my monitor screen. And in some cases, the orange looked orange. Some it looked burnt orange, and some it looked red. So it's one of those things, though. And then I went back and looked at the original series, and it's orange. So it's orange, but depending on how you looked at it, it may have looked red to you. So, and it also seems like it might be something that's like not a colorblind thing, but certain people see the color spectrum a little differently than other people. So I think some people may have seen the bridge and saw lots of red, because when I first saw it, I saw lots of red.
Me too.
But when I saw it on another screen, I saw, oh, it's like a burnt orange kind of orange. So it wasn't a bright orange, like naval orange color or Valencia orange color, whatever. It was a kind of a burnt orange, which is
more red. Let's do this in terms of football teams, Brian. It wasn't like OSU orange, as in Oklahoma State orange.
Right.
Or like the University of Texas burnt orange.
Right.
Like Oklahoma red. That's right, baby. Red is the best.
Or Tennessee. That's another one.
Oh, yeah. Tennessee, that one. I cannot wear that orange. It's not my color wheel.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It was more like, what do they call the Sooner red? What is that? Is it crimson?
It is crimson.
Yeah. It had more of a reddish, it seemed more red than orange to me. But, you know,
that's, it looked red to me. And I think, honestly, that was probably because, like you say, it was probably the device that you were looking on, maybe.
Well, also, it was influenced by the red alerts. And so when you saw it, when the Enterprise was on red alert, it definitely looked red. And then it was probably also influenced by the number of red shirts that were in the episode, because it did look pretty close to that color red. So anyway, I think
also the gold uniforms from the original series, sometimes they look kind of green, sometimes it kind of gold, sometimes look kind of yellow.
In fact, they were originally supposed to be green.
Right.
And, yeah.
Which you can tell when you see his little V-neck job that looks like a wraparound shirt kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It looks way more green way than more any green. Of the other things.
Yep.
But for some reason, how they, I don't know what they did, but they did something, some kind of, I don't know, the way that they shot the episodes or something that they did, they came off as looking goldish or yellow as opposed to green. Strange.
Yeah. And they realized that that's what it looked like. So I think they kind of eventually went with it. But I don't know if they eventually made the shirts gold or if they were always green and it changed to gold in processing or what. I don't know. But
I don't know either. But I do know that I'm glad that the Enterprise crew doesn't have to suffer with Valor.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those things that, you know, to me, this episode, to me, reinforced the decisions that the production staff made, that they have updated the Enterprise to look more modern. I think it just works. I think if it looked like 60s Trek, it just would feel out of place, dated, nostalgic. And
yeah, it wouldn't work.
I just don't think it would work. I don't think, like, it's, again, you have to remember that Star Trek, they are trying to build a legacy here. And if it looks too kitschy, it's just not going to work. So especially when you have the JJ verse and all of that and its look,
right,
there is a certain demographic that's going to expect Star Trek to look a certain way and not be stuck on how it used to look. And I understand there are people that just can't give that up, but it is what it is. They've made decisions, and I have completely come around to what decisions they made and support them. So anyway, let's move on. He's got some more.
Okay. Next, Rick from Cleveland says, what's with that awkward transition in the third act? Discovery needs a new captain. Cut to commercial. Cut back and Pike is on the other side of the bridge making a completely different speech.
Yeah. I see that point exactly. It was kind of a strange thing that the way it was edited there.
Yep.
I don't get the commercials though, so it didn't bother me as much, but I did notice it.
Yeah, it definitely is a noticeable, like a break.
Yeah.
And then come back and it's like, what?
Yeah. Ken from Chicago, he mentions us in his nose. He says, it's what Brian and Ruthie complained about when they were in the mycelial network. They are on a ticking time clock, yet took forever to leave. Yeah, I get the point. And that's kind of what we were talking about this before we started recording. And there are only minutes before the Section 31 Armada arrive, and yet Pike's making this speech. And it just seemed like, and there were several things about that. I almost made my rating. It was going to say something like, we really have to go, but I'm going to take the next hour and tell you how much I love you. Kind of thing. It was just, I see where you're coming with that. The crew just standing and getting shot without ducking or firing back. Yeah, that I mentioned as well.
Yeah.
And then he says, so no one uses gloves or tongs to carry the time crystal?
Yeah, I kind of felt the same. I wrote down, why didn't Pike handle the crystal instead of Burnham?
Yeah.
That was in the cold open. But I think the second time, I think Jet Reno kind of knew that was going to happen. And so she sort of had resolved herself to it.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand. I mean, Pike was just in that room and then he turned around and left. Why didn't he do whatever he needed to be done with the thing if they knew that handling it was going to affect, you know, whatever she said, mind bendy.
Whatever
she said.
Yeah. And for that matter, you know, he didn't say, like, he took a moment and did a look back, but he didn't say anything like, you know, oh, well, you may want to be prepared for what you're about to experience or whatever. Like, he just kind of, he took a moment and then he walked away. So I don't know if he was going to say something and then decided not to or what. I don't know.
I don't know either. Seemed a little bit strange. Though I have to put in there that when they were in the mycelial network, they said you have to go now.
Yeah.
Not, we've got 7 minutes.
Well, that's true.
It was come right now. And to me, right now means drop what you're doing, turn around, and walk away. If someone told me, you've got 7 minutes, I'd be like, okay, I can maybe do this or that or whatever. But that, to me, was the difference between those things. So there's a difference between come right now and we have a ticking clock. That's what I think. I mean, I don't remember them saying, you have 5 minutes, because they couldn't really predict the whole time thing. It was more like, we don't really know. We'll just know when it's time.
Yeah.
And then it was time. And they were like, okay, just a second. Be like, no, really, right now.
All right. Next.
Okay. Next. Mike from Cleveland says, Tyler Burnham, goodbye. Easily the weakest moment of the episode. The idea that control hasn't reached full consciousness yet. I'm seeing ingenuity, the ability to learn, self-awareness, self-preservation, and ambition from control. Spock's decision to stay with Michael on board Discovery should have been its own standalone moment with just him and her present. Maybe had we not wasted airtime with her and Tyler's goodbye, we could have gotten a much better moment, I believe. The reasoning behind why Discovery has to be destroyed right now, especially since they're using the Spore Drive anyways. Why not just jump 70 light years away and work out your plans to defeat control and delete the Sphere's files from Discovery? Isn't that kind of what they did? I mean, we don't know where Zahia is.
Well, first of all, Mike, of course you thought that the Tyler Burnham goodbye was...
Yeah. It's like, if you don't like them, then you would prefer the Spock Michael goodbye instead of the Michael Burnham goodbye, but...
Well, I mean, Mike has...
Michael Burnham goodbye. Michael Tyler.
Is it because her name is Michael? Is that what it is?
Sometimes, maybe. I don't know.
No, just the fact that, you know, he doesn't like the Tyler Burnham whole thing because her name is Michael and his name is Michael.
Maybe.
Probably not. Anyway, so when I first read that, Mike, I thought, okay, well, of course you thought that was weak. But yeah, it's the whole thing about full consciousness. I'm not understanding that myself, because it definitely does seem to have that. Mm-hmm. Unless Discovery has that, like Discovery has it already and Control doesn't, but Control seems to act fully aware. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know about that whole what is sentience, I guess, kind of a thing. It's sort of one of those, how do you really define that? Honestly, it's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems like something that's a little bit more elusive and therefore a little bit less simple to say, oh, it's this.
Your point about why not just jump 70 light years away and work out your plans. I can't dispute that, because I think that there is a flaw, and we saw it last week and we see it this week again. Mind you, they've taken the Spore Drive out, love bug.
But they did do that though, when right. They jumped to Zahia.
Right. I know, but the point I'm trying to make is that you would think that with the Spore Drive, they could Spore Drive away a very, very long distance, making it like tens, if not hundreds of years before Control can reach them. Like, for example, if they went back to Terra Elysium, you know, that is 51,000 light years away from wherever their previous position was. So anyway, deep in the Beta Quadrant. So I would think that just sporing tens of thousands of light years away, it would significantly increase how long it would take Control to get there. And for that matter, you know, they could start going there, and when they get close, Spore Drive away to the opposite way that they'd have to go back. And anyway, my point being that it would take them a long time to reach them. So you could play a a game of hide and seek for a long time, hundreds of years, thousands of years before control would ever reach them, you know.
You could, but that kind of makes it, it's a, what's the, I can't think of what the phrase is for that, but that kind of makes it like, it's not a mulligan, but it's a,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Where it's like, well, that's basically the indefeatable cure or something, like, ugh.
Yeah. And the point being, kind
of like, get out of jail free card for the rest of time.
Yeah. They have realized that the Severe's files can't be deleted from Discovery. So them trying to work plans to delete the files, it seems like that's pointless. Now, what might be more fruitful would be to, oh, I don't know, figure out a way to drain the shields. Because the way that they made it seem is that Discovery would have an unlimited supply of the ability to defend itself, which for shields eventually go down to zero. They don't stay at 100% forever. So I would think that a sufficient bombardment of energy, whatever, matter, weaponry, antimatter, whatever. And I should mention Giorgio and her antimatter into a Nova. I probably should have been in my yeses.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. Looking at her like, monster. I thought there were no bad ideas. No, that is definitely a bad idea.
Yeah. So anyway, I would think that there would be a way to destroy Discovery. So if I were trying to devise a method, I would spend more time in figuring out how to destroy Discovery versus trying to delete the files. I don't think that deleting the files is going to work because it's already been made clear that that wasn't going to work. So the only way you could would be to destroy the ship. So anyway, other than that, I don't have anything more to say about Mike's nose there. What about your nose?
I didn't really have any.
Okay. I had a couple. One's kind of nitpicky, but it has a wee bit glossy on that bridge. Really glossy. I don't know if I would have made the bridge of the Enterprise that shiny. I mean, that was about my only criticism of it. Otherwise, it looked amazing. I just would like just take the glossiness down 20%. Or as some people like to keep mentioning, 25%. So that's some stupid thing that was said at one point about making the show look 25% different, which is just a creative choice, nothing more. So wasn't anything that CBS said or in their licensing, as the haters try to say. It was just a creative decision. But anyway, I think my biggest no, and I spent the last couple minutes of the show going, Spock, you're not supposed to be on Discovery. We know you're not going to be on Discovery, so why are you still on Discovery? To me, that affected the story, and it was just like they tipped their hands a little bit to say that we know that however this is going to work out, we know at the end Spock goes back to Enterprise. Because if he doesn't, then the whole time thing is completely changed. And either they're in a different universe or a new timeline has been set up. And quite honestly, if that happens, my brain will fry itself and I will go comatose and probably won't be back next episode.
I felt like what that ultimately meant was it wasn't going to turn out like that.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. Like, yeah, make all the plans you want. It's not going to go that way.
Yeah.
But they don't know that yet. And there are times in any type of entertainment medium, whether it's literature or movies or what have you, TV shows, etc., where the audience, listener, reader, whatever, knows more than the people in the show. That happens sometimes. Yeah. And I'm okay with that. And I feel like that's kind of what's going on right now.
Yeah.
They're making all these plans, but we're like, we know that's not going to work out that way.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen instead, but we are pretty sure it's not going to go like that.
Well, anyway, that's the one thing I think I wouldn't have done as a writer. I would have just, because that basically what I'm saying is, we know that Discovery is in the future. We know that from Calypso. We know that Spock does not end up on Discovery. So
we know that from the original series.
We know that from the original series. So because of that, these two things don't correlate and something has to happen. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in those visions with, I'd have to go back. Maybe I'm wrong. And I will verify this before I put this into the episode. So if I'm wrong about this, there will be an editor's note that will pop up right after I say this. I don't think Spock was in that sequence on the bridge where Leland comes in and kills everybody. I don't remember seeing him there. So
I think you're correct. I don't think he was there.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe that tells us, but you know, how, if that's true and how he gets back to the Enterprise, I don't think we know. But anyway, my point being that maybe that's one way that they tipped us to say that he won't be there, but maybe there'll be a problem on Enterprise. Maybe the whole thing, I'm going to mention this a bit, but there's something we see about Enterprise. Maybe that's why he goes back there. We'll get to that in the Hold Your Horses. But anyway, that whole thing, as a writer, I would have put Spock on the Enterprise and get his damn uniform back on. But anyway, all right, so let's move on to our favorite segment.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
All right, well, we've got from Brian from Hawaii, and we've got a response from Todd. We'll add it because I thought he had some interesting things to say there. But he says, if Discovery is protecting itself, why does it let the crew come back and do all of that work with the goal of taking it to the future? That's a good question. I don't know. Any thoughts?
Because the future is not destruction. It's not the same thing as destruction.
Right.
I mean, you're still living. And what does it matter to the Discovery, whether or not it's now or 5,000 years in the future?
I don't know.
I don't think it does. It's not the same as for, say, one of us. If I jumped 5,000 years in the future, basically my life would be over because everything I know, everyone I know would be dead or different. So while, yes, I would still be alive, it would be a radically different life. But is that true for a sentient ship? Does it really matter? I don't think so. So that's what I think about that.
Yeah. Also, what was behind the exchange between Giorgio and Pike as he transported away? She said she's a Terran from his mirror universe, and he just winked back saying, what mirror universe? So we got a response from Todd. You want to read that?
All right. Todd from Ohio says, the exchange, it was a conversation Pike was meant to have with Michael, but never did. This was the last time, essentially, Giorgio might see Pike, so she just blurted it out so he couldn't really do anything about it. He probably suspected something like that. He knew about Lorca and the mirror universe, I think. They had a bigger fish to fry, and he was mid-transport, basically just saying unofficially, I know, but officially he's not supposed to know. I liked the moment.
I did too. And I think he knew already, either, like you said, either he suspected or off-screen, Burnham, or even Tyler, for that matter, told him.
Yeah.
I tend to think that...
Probably just figured it out.
Well, there was a discussion about, I think in like episode, I want to say three. It was one of the first couple of episodes with Giorgio in it that they had that discussion about, you know, what's going on with Giorgio and...
Yeah. I mean, the entire crew of the Discovery knew. So right. How long is this secret really going to be kept?
Right.
Let's be honest here, because the only way to keep a secret is for one person to know.
Right.
Otherwise, somebody eventually going to figure out eventually.
Yeah. And for that matter, she was so not trying to keep her identity secret. I mean,
right. She wasn't really doing that much to hide, pretend like she was the real or the not mirror universe Giorgio. She was kind of out there.
Way out there.
For real.
Yeah. Yeah, the antimatter thing, that was...
yeah. I mean, if that didn't let you know...
I don't think anything did. Would. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fred from Netherlands is next, and he says, Michael talking about mitochondrial RNA. I think I said that right. Bzz, scientific filler, he says.
Oh, gosh. Poor Michael. It's true, though. If it is attuned to DNA, she would be the best chance of making it work.
She would.
Anyway. All right, Rick from Cleveland. First, as we start, they are still in Klingon space with warp-equipped shuttles. Okay, subspace communication is down. Maybe hop over to Kronos and flag down Laurel.
Well, I tend to think that that is what Tyler was about to do. That's why he says he's going to leave.
Yeah.
By
then, though, they were not in Klingon space anymore.
Right. That's the other point I was going to make, is that they started in Klingon space, but when they reached the Enterprise, they are no longer in Klingon space. They went to
when the Enterprise reached them.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Next.
All right. Next, Rick says, this carries over into the visit from Sarek and Amanda. If you can find them with your Cutressons, you can find some help.
Yeah.
What? I don't understand what you mean by that.
I don't know, but I guess the point being that there would be... Well, you know, and that's another thing, too. Control only controlled the subspace relays of the Federation. Klingon subspace, however, may have still been clear, so that could have been another thing that that Tyler was going to do. Maybe he was going to communicate with Starfleet through Klingon subspace. I don't know. Who knows? But
either.
Yeah. I mean, the subspace thing, that would explain, I guess, how only the Enterprise was able to be contacted. I assume that maybe some point between the last episode and this episode, the control shut down all the subspace relays. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, they said they only had ship-to-ship communication.
Right.
So does that mean when you can see the ship, you can communicate with it? Otherwise, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I guess, I don't know. I never really understood ship-to-ship communication, how that would work. Maybe you have to have a specific, a specific code or something. Like, you have to know that ship's code specifically. Kind of like if you're, websites have IP addresses.
Right.
You can type in the IP address to the website if you don't know the name of the website.
I think that's a fantastic analogy. Yeah.
Thank you. I thought so.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're probably correct. Like it would be like subspace relays are like literally like routers that are routing things from from this ship to that ship. And if you don't know where this ship is, it goes through a subspace relay to get to whoever. But
right.
If you,
like, you can Google it.
Right.
Find the web address.
Right. Exactly. But if for some reason web addresses are down, and this hasn't happened in many years, but it has happened before, that the only way to get to, you know, said thing is if the,
you know, this specific
IP address.
IP address. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there are tons and tons of websites out there that I don't know and could never find unless I knew the specific IP address of the website, right. Basically.
Right. So it's worth saying that, like, subspace relays aren't equivalent to Google. They're more equivalent to the DNS system. Right. So anyway,
yeah,
and for that matter, we're not saying that Federation starships have IP addresses.
It's an analogy.
It's an analogy. Yes. All right. LT from NC is next. He says, did they use up all the budget for the scenes in engineering with the spore drive? They didn't show Stamets in the cabin, just him with his sleeves rolled up post-jump. And about that, where did the forearm sockets go? I don't recall seeing the thingy-doos on his arms. Huh. Interesting.
I am going to say yes. They ran out of budget for those scenes. We already know they blew their budget on the first four episodes, yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. I didn't pick up on the thingy doos, as he mentioned, not being on his arms, but that's a good point.
Thingy doos.
Yeah. Yep.
That's funny.
Good sub for James, by the way. Thingamadoos. Yep. Just the way they handled the spore drive, maybe they heard me yelling at the TV. Maybe someone finally decided it was too easy just spore drum their way around plot complications.
Yes, that's exactly what I was talking about when I said they can't. That's kind of like a get out of jail free card thing for, I don't know. I guess it is a mulligan where it's just you can just have an endless supply of do-overs or something.
Yeah. However, it just felt as bad to me for them to always whip it out as to keep throwing the it's broken and unusable the last couple of times.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I am not really a huge fan of the spore drive in general, because it's too easy to use. It's too easy to be like, let's just use our get out of jail free card, aka the spore drive.
Yeah. For someone who is about to get in a fight for their lives and being chased by a huge swarm of bad guys, it seemed a bad time for Sarek and Amanda to show up for a visit. Can we assume that Control would just ignore Michael's parents? Since when did any bad guy chasing Spider-Man ever ignore Aunt May? Yeah, like I said before, the Sarek and Amanda thing was an interesting choice. I think having them there made sense, but at the same time didn't. So it was a little strange.
I felt like, to me, the like them showing up, I mean, if you recall the very first scene of the episode, Sarek is doing his mind thing. To me, I kind of feel like he knew where they were gonna be, and so he went there.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it seemed like to me. I mean, maybe that's far-fetched and not believable, but that was the impression that I got, is that he knew where they were gonna be, so he went there. And they were there! Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But that goes back to that whole, I can find you with my Katra thing, whatever thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
All right, so that's it for listener Hold Your Horses. So do we have any Hold Your Horses? Ruthie, do you?
I guess to me, the Hold Your Horses would be the whole why didn't Pike handle the crystal thing. That's kind of like,
Yeah.
And then the second thing is kind of like, how exactly is the data accomplishing all of this? But that's sort of an ongoing hold your horses thing. Like, I don't really feel like that's been sufficiently explained to me. So that's all I got, really.
Yeah.
Because I'm still not sure. I mean, is the ship already self-aware, like Control? And if that's the case, why don't we just let the ship defend itself from Control?
I don't know. Yeah. In a lot of ways, it's like, you know, kind of a good versus evil thing, you know?
Yes. Oh my gosh. It's Person of Interest all over again. Did you ever watch that show?
No.
Oh, it was so good. You had the machine versus, I can't remember what it was called.
Spoiler.
Evil machine.
I may watch it someday.
Well, you should watch it, but that's not really a spoiler.
All right. So as far as my things, I mainly just like, who is still on Discovery? Is Poe still on Discovery? We had already talked about. Is Giorgio still on Discovery? I am thinking the answer is yes, based on what we had talked about, that she was on Discovery at the time of the flashback, or not the flashback, but the vision of the moment of Burnham's death. So I don't know. At first, I wanted to give a hold your horses to Reno. I thought, well, does she know Burnham that well to volunteer? But then again, I thought about it. It's like, well, okay. What do we know about Reno? A, she lost her wife. B, we saw her being selfless on the Hiawatha, right? Keeping all those patients alive, using extraordinary measures. So and she volunteered for that. Like she said, of course she would. So it's in her character. And last thing is that Burnham saved her. So she's just paying it forward, I guess, repaying a favor. So it's,
yeah. And technically she's been on the ship since that first episode. We just haven't seen her every time because Pig isn't always available, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sad face.
Yeah.
I hope that changes in season 3. Yeah. Pretty please.
The other hold your horses, I guess I should say, I'll say this here as opposed to in regular feedback, that there was a problem, I guess, on certain applications or certain time zones, I guess. For example, Brian from Hawaii, it had shown up for him 5 hours later than usual. the episode didn't show up. And I had noticed at one point where, you know, I was off on Friday. We're recording this, you know, on Saturday morning this time. Now it's Saturday afternoon, but whatever. When we originally recorded, I was still up and I was about to rewatch and I couldn't watch it on my phone. It wouldn't let me, even though I had already saved it. It wouldn't let me watch it. Huh. But then what happened is that their app updated. And I think that was the problem because when it came back, the interface on my phone had completely updated and suddenly things that weren't available before, like rewind and fast forward, were available. And the play was much better. The captions were finally fixed completely. So they had been working before. That whole apostrophe thing had been working okay the last couple of weeks, but now it was the look of it had been changed and all that. So I think it might have had to do with the fact that they were doing an upgrade. So Brian from Hawaii, you'd mentioned it in your feedback about it. This is why I think it happened. Just bad timing. They probably should have done it the day before. But
yeah, anyway. They should have done their updates on a different time. But then I guess maybe there's always an episode that's going to be ready or something right. on their CBS All Access. So,
and it's worth noting that The Twilight Zone and The Good Fight all had new episodes on Thursday. So
this is why you plan things for like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, that's what they try to do, but I think they maybe did it.
Fail.
Yeah. What I tend to think happened, you know, just from a web developer kind of perspective, they probably tried to do the release before and it failed, you know, so, or there was a bug and, you know, they couldn't get it to work, but they wanted to get it out as soon as possible. So they got it out a day late or 2 days late.
Probably something like that. Who knows?
But I will say that is worth it because the app is so much better now. I am very impressed with the play on Android now compared to the way it was.
That's good.
Yeah.
I noticed on my TV time that it told me on Wednesday afternoon that the Star Trek Discovery episode was available.
I noticed that.
I was like, what? Of course it wasn't. But
well, and
for some reason, TV time, which pulls its information from the TV database, which they're, I don't like them. I have issues with them.
Yeah.
So for some reason, they're stupid and have incorrect information. So way to go, TVDB. You guys are on the ball.
Well, and TVDB did not have the fact that there was a new episode of The Orville until after there was a new episode of The Orville.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of the TVDB.
Yeah.
So if anybody who is a web operator, whatever person for the TVDB, I'm not happy with you. Sorry, but I have issues with the way your website is run.
Fair enough. All right.
Sorry, not sorry. That's what I have to say.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I think happened. But let's move on to our regular feedback.
Very good.
All right. So we've got a voicemail from, well, he missed a couple weeks this season, but he's been back in fine form the last couple. Mark.
Yeah. Hey, Brian. Hey, Ruthie. Mark from Ontario, Canada here with my feedback for Such Sweet Sorrow. I give this episode 8.5 momentous snow globes. Start off with my yeses. The original Star Trek music playing in the background when Enterprise first shows up. I thought that was pretty cool, as well as the Enterprise itself. Yes, it looks modern, but man, did it remind me of the old Enterprise as well. So good job on them. And a final yes was just seeing Poe again. For some reason, I had forgotten all about her and I wasn't expecting to see her again, but it was actually a good tie back to the short and it did make sense. Now, as for my nos, last week, it seemed like the Section 31 ships were right on top of them. What were they going to do? And now this week, they're like way, way out there. That just didn't make sense. It seemed like last week it was such an imminent threat. The other no is it seemed like Admiral Cornwell was in charge of Enterprise while Pike was on Discovery. Well, if Cornwell was in charge of Enterprise, why was she still dressed in one of the old uniforms? Everybody else on the ship had adopted the new uniform style. You'd think she would have as well. Now, my hold your horses. When Michael tells them to stop and don't fire that torpedo because it won't work, they just take her word for it? I would have ordered a torpedo away anyways. And when they saw that the shields were up, why not just exhaust their entire battery of armaments and try to take down the shields? We all know it's possible. And how do they have the technical specifications for the suit from Section 31? Did Section 31 freely give that to them? I don't remember that. Anyways, so my observations from the show, well, try to destroy the sphere data, check. Try to scuttle the ship, check. Take the ship to the future, check, check. So far, all my predictions are coming true. Although the whole idea of them not being able to come back really had me intrigued. And I would have been guessing that possibly next season, Discovery would be in the future, which I would have been okay with. It would have been kind of cool to see this single Starfleet vessel exploring the future, except for the fact that Spock is on board Discovery, and we obviously know he doesn't go to the future. And when Michael had her vision of the battle and what was happening in Leland bordering them, Georgiou was on Discovery, and she's on Enterprise. So unless some stuff changes there, I think they will find a way back. Now, it might only be next season, but who knows? Now, a few final things here. I hope that's not the end of Jet when she set Tilly and Stamets out and she was going to handle the crystal herself. I hope that's not the end of her. And what is Tyler up to? And finally, I'm probably grasping at straws here. At one point, they mentioned that the Enterprise will arrive in 57 minutes with control 10 minutes behind them. Well, I know if you add the two together, that's an hour and 7 minutes. But if you subtract this 10 from 57, you get your 47. I know, I'm grasping. Anyway, Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
Oh my gosh, Mark, I really want that to be true.
About the 47?
I really want Discovery to be in the future.
Yeah.
Please, please, please make that happen. Please.
To that, I have to say, of course, thank you so much. And Mark, I want to make sure to play it intentionally because half the time I forget. So... And I put it in after the fact. But this time, I remembered. So
right. Maybe Spock and Georgiou switch places.
Well, I don't think Georgiou is on Enterprise. We saw her beam Pike over to Enterprise, but we did not see her beam over to Enterprise herself. So maybe she stays over and Spock goes over. That makes sense. But we'll see.
So if you look at the vision... Spock's not there. Georgiou is.
Right.
But then if you look at the people who say, we're staying with you, Spock's there. Georgiou isn't.
True.
So I feel like something happened in between the time that those people said that and the time that whatever time where the vision takes place.
Well,
something happened maybe. Maybe they still do go to the future. Yes.
Well, that's.
Add that to my yeses. Please. Please, please, please. I really want that to happen. Man, getting a little warm over here because I want that to happen.
A little verklempt.
I am. I'm feeling a little, I'm so out of sorts now, Mark. Gosh, I really want that to happen.
Yeah. By the way, it's funny. Michelle Paradise used the word verklempt, and which made me think of it. I'll explain that later. But anyway, yeah. I hope that it goes to the future as well. I can't wait to see what next week brings. I wish that it were Thursday already.
I know. Like, I really don't like cliffhangers.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got some cliffhangers of my own. I'd like to see how they play out.
I mean, in the long run, yeah, it's fine. Whatever. It's a nice literary device or what have you. But at the time, I'm like, ah, no.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I saw somewhere, I don't think it was on our Facebook group, but I saw on some other Facebook group where somebody mentioned, thank God that it wasn't the best of both worlds season finale where we would have to wait 3 months before we get the episode. So we only have to wait a week. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a plus, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree with you on Poe, that the use of Poe here was good. I believed it. I know someone else said that they thought it was stretching it, but I thought it was good.
I thought it was perfect.
Section 31, close? No, it's far. No, it's close. No, it's far. Yeah, they did not make it very apparent that the Section 31 ships were that far away. Like, there was... nothing to indicate. I mean, maybe it was just that they were entering the sector or something. I don't know, but there was no amount of time given there. So about Cornwell and the uniforms, all I have to say about is indeed. I'm hoping that the end of the season, that would be a good time to convert everyone to the traditional yellow, blue, red color convention and be done with this blue,
tracksuit looking thing.
Well, I don't mind the tracksuit looking thing. It's the problem is that it's all blue.
And I don't mind the tracksuit looking thing either. I'm just saying trying to be done with it.
Yes. I think we have to get back to it. And, you know, maybe it was just Discovery, you know, making its own identity. But I think we have to get to a point if Discovery is going to remain, you know, in the 2257, 8, 9, wherever.
But if they go to the future, it doesn't matter.
In the future, it doesn't matter. So, okay.
Please go to the future.
But your point is the point that I brought up earlier about Spock. Yep, the Spock issue. That's why I say that they should have had Spock go over to Enterprise because of reasons. I don't care what the reasons are. Like I say, I think it would have been no other character do we know where they end up. But we do know that Spock ends up on Enterprise. That's
Pike,
a given.
We know what happens to Pike ultimately.
Yeah, but Pike went to Enterprise. Pike is off Discovery already, but Spock should also be off Discovery and ends up on Enterprise, but he's not yet. So that's the big question that I've got there. So anyway, Jet, yes, Jet can't die, but I wish that they would make Tig Notaro a full-time cast member season 3. I want to see her be chief engineer, and let's dispense everything else. Let's just make that happen.
Yeah.
So.
Please find a way to make it. I want them in the future and I want Tig. Thank you. That's all.
And one question, like it was established that Culber would be on Enterprise. Is he still on Enterprise? Did he go to Enterprise or did he stay back? We don't know.
He went to Enterprise. Okay. So at the very beginning when they had that whole everybody going over on the evacuation corridors or whatever.
Right.
Only people who went back to Discovery are those who specifically were going to address the time crystal, time suit, yada yada stuff. Those are the only people who went back.
Okay.
They had like the skeleton crew only and the people who were directly in charge of, because remember, before they even left, I believe, they found the signal. The signal is over Poe's planet, right? So then that's when Tilly has her whole what and the whole the lithium crystal thing, right? And right. So that's when they get the whole idea that Poe can help them figure out the lithium or the time crystal issue thing. That's when they get everybody to go, the only people who need to go back over.
Okay.
So because Stamets and Culber already had their tearful goodbye thing, which I was kind of against. It's like, man, Hugh, you big fat sissy pants coward, but whatever. Just throw away a good thing because you're not sure about whatever thing. Did you not listen to anything that Jet Reno said to you? Whatever. Yeah. So the only people who went over there are the people who were basically going to work on that.
Right.
Problem. So yeah, everybody else gone from Discovery, including Hugh. Hugh gone. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I hope you're right on the 47, but I think I think you got it backwards. I think, okay, so this is what it was. I believe that the Enterprise was 57 minutes away, and then later on we get an update that they're only 10 minutes away. So how many minutes? No. I know what he said. I know what he said in the voicemail, but what I'm saying, I did a different method of identifying a 47. They indicated that it was 57 minutes away and something was 57 minutes away and then it was 10 minutes away. So,
no.
Okay. All right.
It was the Enterprise is 57 minutes away and Leland's ship is 10 minutes after that.
Right. I know. I got that. But I'm saying later they said that the Enterprise was 10 minutes away, I believe.
I don't think that's true. I think the Enterprise showed up and that's how they had their 10-minute counter because Leland's ship is 10 minutes after that.
Okay. That's, yeah, I gathered that. And anyway, I'll take it as a 47, but anyway, I thought I identified something else. Ruthie, okay, doesn't,
you guys are
doesn't
both
agree.
Stretching. You guys are both stretching.
Exactly. Both of us are stretching. Because we have to have a 47, and if we don't have a 47, it's not an episode, and we've got enough of them that don't.
Oh, pshaw. We've had plenty of episodes where there's been no 47.
That's what I mean. So we have to have a 47. Which is kind of funny.
I don't, that makes no sense whatsoever. That's what I mean. We've had plenty of episodes that haven't had a 47, but we can't have an episode without a 47.
Exactly.
What? Okay. So I just want you to acknowledge that you're in your own little world there.
My belief is that the episodes that we didn't have a 47 actually do have a 47. We just didn't find it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I accept that you believe that. Oh, my gosh.
One has to believe, you know, the power of the 47.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to our next bit of feedback. And that is from our
Fred from the Netherlands friend.
Yep.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 13. I give this episode 10 out of 10 Enterprise Bridge nostalgic shivers. Really, when Pike walked onto the USS Enterprise Bridge, I really got the shivers. I think they did a very nice job in finding a nice equilibrium between new and old, with a lot of references just to the old Enterprise. I had, of course, some yeses, noes, and hold your horses, but you already discussed them, so I don't have to repeat them here. What I actually liked most was the returning of Poe into this episode and the interaction with Tilly and the way this 17-year-old queen is acting and how smart she is. Very nice. And actually the best quote of the episode was said by her, in my opinion. One of the fun things about becoming queen of the most politically relevant planet in the galaxy is that I don't have to listen to any snark. And she was saying that towards Georgiou. What I found a little less enjoyable was all the goodbye recordings of the crew members and Burnham saying goodbye to Amanda and Sarek. It was a bit too much. Some of it was nice. We heard some backgrounds of some of the crew members, but a little bit of overload. And as said, strange that Sarek and Amanda were there. Very nice, though, that Sarek apologized. One shot that I liked a lot is when Saru and Pike verify the remote autodestruct and they put their hands on these fingerprint recognition machines. And first you see Saru touching this and then you have in front of that, out of focus, Pike's hand. And then after Saru has verified his order, then it switches in focus to the front and then you see Anson Mount's hand with a lot of hairs on it. And this transition, only in the 2-3 seconds, was so nicely filmed. And in this close-up, you also see the homage to the old Enterprise because of the choice of lights and buttons, etc. Okay, that was all for now. Till the finale next week. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands. P.S. And we'll have no more holographic communications ever.
Yeah, I like that. No more holographic communications on this ship ever.
Ever.
That's pretty awesome. I agree with Poe and her line about Snark, that I don't have to listen to Snark ever again. And whatever she said, in fact, I made it a law. I think that's what she said. She made it a something.
Yeah, she made it a law.
What I would assume that a queen would make. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
I would too. If I were queen, I'd be like, I'm going to make this a law. I don't have to listen to Snark from anybody.
Yeah. I wish that were a law. I was a victim of some snark this week.
Yeah. Sometimes snark is fun though, but sometimes it's really not.
Well, yeah. And
good natured snark, that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that's my me anyway.
I would agree. Now, one thing I wanted to question though, is the politically relevant part. Now, we know that it would be politically relevant if about the dilithium recrystallization, but like, is that actually well known yet? Because no one on the Enterprise seemed to know about it. So, or on the, sorry, on the Discovery seemed to know about it except for Tilly. So I think that how much of that was it being relevant to her versus it actually being like a story that has gone out there and the Federation kind of making that a thing, because it didn't seem like Cornwell knew about it either. And, you know, she's an admiral. Of course, she's been cut off from control, so maybe she wouldn't know. I don't know.
I think you just answered your own question.
Okay.
They've been cut off. I mean, okay, I will say once again, things sometimes happen off screen that we don't necessarily see or know. I know they talked about it. I know that Tilly said something about, if you can do that, that would be awesome. Well, probably what I would say is that Poe took that and ran with it. And yeah, she contacted the Federation and said, hey, man, guess what I can do? And the Federation was like, what?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, just because, also, I have one more thing to say. Just because they don't know about the dilithium recrystallization stuff doesn't mean that it's not in the works.
That's okay? True.
So just because, I mean, they don't necessarily disseminate all information about everything all the time. So it could be in the works with people high up. I mean, she's the queen of the planet. Right. So she knows some stuff that maybe the plebs on her planet don't know.
That's true.
So maybe the higher ups in Starfleet are talking to her, but they haven't necessarily told the plebs in Starfleet.
But Cornwell's there.
Well, so?
Okay.
I mean, how high? So?
Maybe that explains.
Just because she's an admiral doesn't mean she knows everything either.
Maybe that explains why Sarek was there. Maybe Sarek was there to negotiate.
Maybe so.
There you go. Now we have a reason. I love it. Anyway.
We're all coming back together.
Yep. So, and again, I'll forget. So I must play, of course, Fred. Thank you so much for your feedback and, of course, your lovely images.
For all you do for us.
Yes, this bud's for you.
You're the best. And Fred, also, take care of yourself.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah, Fred, hopefully things are getting better for you. And I look forward to see what images you have for us. So,
yes, can't wait.
All right, so let's move on to our regular feedback. So,
our non-vocal feedback.
Our non-vocal feedback, our written feedback.
Yes.
First is from LT from NC. I'll read this one. I just kept getting the feeling that the time of arrival for the Section 31 fleet was being counted in Microsoft file transfer minutes. Oh, this is classic, LT. I love this. Yeah, and I can see the little paper going from one file folder to the other.
Yeah.
The sense of urgency and impending doom just kept sliding for me. Yeah, I agree with you on that, LT. It definitely was that way. And then he has a sidebar. I know I tossed a lot of out-of-sync comments this time, and I don't want to be that guy, in quotes, but I really enjoy the podcast. Well, thank you, LT.
Thank you. We enjoy you.
Thank you again for making me feel like I'm not the only disco fan in the world. You are not the only disco fan in the world.
Absolutely not.
If I listened to all the guys on YouTube, I'd begin to think I was the only fan on the planet. No, you're not
listening to them.
Yeah, I would. here's one that I would recommend. It's called Kurtratz, and I'm not going to spell it out. Kurtratz is Dan Gunther from. He's on Literary Treks on the Trek FM. Certainly, I would go to his channel, and the reason why I don't spell it out is take Star Trek and reverse the letters, like as if you were like 841947, and reverse the letters, and it's Star Trek. So it's Star Trek reverse is Kurtratz. Anyway, go to his channel. He's very positive on Discovery. Trek Yards is fair in their criticisms. Who else can I say? Text Trek. That's another YouTube channel that's pretty positive. And I think it's Subspace Transmissions. Those guys, they also have a podcast, but they have episodes on YouTube. They're very positive on Discovery as well. But anyway, positive people. There's a couple of them on YouTube. And there are lots of good other podcasts on Discovery. Of course, we're the best of them. So
naturally.
Naturally. All right. So, yeah. Well, thank you so much, LT. We appreciate, you know, we've been thankful that you found us, and we're here. So we'll keep being here. We'll hopefully do more episodes during the hiatus, not like we did, you know, only like, you know, two or three or whatever in between this season. But we'll be back. I mean, we're going to be back for Picard whenever that comes out. So.
Yeah, hopefully there will be more episodes, generally speaking, of Star Trek stuff.
Yes.
So, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. All right, next.
Okay, Rick from Cleveland says, Tilly gets snarky when stressed. Eat a Snickers.
That's funny. I know.
Oh, that's funny. Who will she turn into when she eats the Snickers?
She will turn into Captain Killy.
No, she should be Captain Killy before she eats the Snickers, and then she eats the Snickers and she turns back into regular Tilly.
Ah,
that's how that works.
That's good.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's funny. I like
I want to see a future, by the way, with Captain Tilly.
Captain Killy.
No, Tilly. The real Captain Tilly.
Yeah, I know. Me too. And she says that's going to happen. Poe does. She's confident.
Yep.
All right. He says, I loved all the goodbyes and how we're getting even more about the crew, which looks like it will get smaller and more focused if the story goes where it seems to be. I thought there were no bad ideas. I loved that bit. Pike's wink in the transporter room. Did he know all along, or is there more at play? Wrapping up on one note, if all the short treks tie to this season, does that mean somehow we get Harry Mudd in the finale? I have to get a disgusting bowl of goo. I had a disgusting bowl of goo for breakfast this morning, and it was quite tasty. Oh, my gosh, that's funny. Yeah, I loved Pike's wink, and I loved the whole, I thought there were no bad ideas.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, that was, oh, man. That was classic.
That was awesome. That was amazing.
Todd is next. He says, first, he had an early comment. He says, ugh, so this episode will probably tie into that one Tilly short trek based on the previously on. I hope it's got enough story progression and not just fan service to the short trek tie-ins. I would just say, Todd, I don't think there's enough fan service because there's a lot of people that haven't even bothered to watch the short treks. Maybe,
I know. Maybe they were really confused when they were watching that previously on. Like, wait, what? I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Well, you should go watch the short treks, shouldn't you?
Exactly. So I tend to think that this one would have people watch them. You know, certainly like that's the point that was, you know, made by Rick earlier about the Harry Mudd. That's the only one at this point that hasn't had a tie in, because the Brightest Star, you know, that's clearly been tied in with the mm-hmm. stuff from Kaminar. Mm-hmm. We see the Calypso one being hinted at, although, you know, we don't have definitively that this is the case, but, you know, figuratively, it seems to be. And now we have the first one clearly having a tie-in. So it is only Harry Mudd that's left. And the only thing that I, like I said, the time crystal part is the only thing I could see. And we still don't know where in time that short trek lies either. The only thing that we have is that Starship, I think it was the DeMilo, we have Discovery era uniforms on it. So they don't have, you know, the mustard colored.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the only thing tying it to a particular time. But other than that, we don't know. So anyway, moving on, he says, I'm glad my concerns were unfounded. I love this episode, and Poe was perfect. So it's funny that Pike was trying to be all formal with the welcome, and Tilly just brings her ice cream.
Yeah, and Tilly and Poe completely cuts off his Welcome with the big, huge, long name, Tilly.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It made me appreciate the that, because that was like my least favorite of them. But the thing that I would say is that the problem I had was the way that we got to the character of Poe in the end. I didn't like, but once we got the end character, the payoff was here. I mean, we even seen her and her weird sniffing, and I loved how they made it obvious the multiple blinking.
The eyelid?
Yeah, the eyelids, you know, both vertical and horizontal. I thought that was cool. And we had seen that in the short trek, but it was prominent this time as well. We didn't see the spikes, though. So if Poe is on...
Well, she wasn't really threatened.
Right. Well, I was going to say, though, if Poe is on Discovery, I would expect those spikes to come out when Leland shows up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah. Anyway, Todd continues. He says, it's pretty much a perfect episode. I'm still wondering about the final two of seven signals they need to encounter, because if this Michael doesn't know about their location yet, how can the Red Angel, her now, send them out? That's a good question. I tend to think that those two locations will make themselves obvious in the next episode. So,
yeah, that's one of those time travel things. It's like, we did it because we knew about it because it happened already.
Yeah. And this is a good time. This reminds me of a question that I had, because you've mentioned it many times. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
That's right.
I don't get the reference.
Oh, that's from Doctor Who.
I know. Oh. I still don't get the reference, though, because I don't watch Doctor Who.
Well, someone asks him to explain how time is, and he says time is not linear. It's more wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Okay.
So that's what that means, basically. Okay. Time. It's basically the idea that time, like he says, is not linear. It doesn't happen in a straight line. It's wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
It wobbles.
Yeah. It's like a big hole. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Poe is going to stay and fight on the ship, but then she disappears later. Well, she has the ability to cloak herself. I will say that part.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's right.
Where did she go? Could she have become part of the device for that engine she was working on to help its instabilities? Well, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Excellent question.
Yeah. Anyone nervous about Michael going into the future as another Red Angel and taking Discovery there?
Maybe a little bit.
I would say yes. I mean, Control is in Discovery's computers. Control can use Discovery and its systems for nefarious purposes from that time period, thus fulfilling what they are trying to prevent. Or it just has to wait until it figures out how to intersect with Pike and Tyler's shuttle from a few episodes ago. After having some time in the future to evolve those probe tentacles or whatever, right?
Oh.
That's pretty...
creepy.
I have to say. Gotta say, Todd, didn't think about the tentacles thing, but that is interesting.
As long as there are no more eye needles, I'm okay.
It is worth saying, though, that Control is not in Discovery. The sphere data is in Discovery. So that's a point that you have to just make sure that you get, that they're not the same. So... and I would say that Control has a subset of the data that Discovery has. So
it has a portion of it. It didn't get all of it. So, yeah.
And I thoroughly expect at this point that the data that is in Discovery will turn into Zora from Calypso at some
that's
point.
That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's it for Todd's feedback. Thank you so much, Todd.
Yes. Thank you, Todd. Okay, next we have Mike from Cleveland. He says, it seems to me Ruthie is about to get her wish for Discovery to be taking place in the far future instead of as a prequel for TOS. That's funny. I really want that. The only realistic reason for the show having Sarek and Amanda show up this episode was to give us the viewers closure on that relationship. We will obviously get a gut-wrenching goodbye for her and Spock in the finale when she has to leave him behind for some reason. I'm fearful we are losing Michelle Yeoh for season 3 also. She has been amazing this season, but with her getting her own series, there's just no way she's going with Burnham and the crew. Her absence could be heavily missed in season 3. If they have figured out a way to tie in the escape artist short trek into the finale, I will be the happiest trekker ever. Eat and die, Discovery haters. It's all connected. I'm pretty sure that was supposed to say trekker, not trucker. Autocorrect fail.
Yeah. Just which is so kind of funny know. Because Mike is a trucker.
Oh, well, maybe it was supposed to say trucker. That you'll have to let us know. Was that supposed to say trucker or trekker? Or
both. It absolutely could be both.
Trucker, trekker?
Yeah.
Trekker, trekker? I may have made a correction there, assuming that you had an autocorrect fail, but maybe not. Let us know.
Both are appropriate, though. So
that's right.
Yeah.
So I will read both. I will be the happiest trucker ever or the happiest trekker ever. Anyway, final thought for now. I'm not a Saru for Captain Backer. In my humble opinion, I think he would be boring in that role.
Huh.
Truth be told, Janeway is probably my favorite captain because she had genuine, believable personal relationships with every other main cast member. Archer and Sisko were probably second best as this. Picard always came off standoffish to me, once again, in my humble opinion. Saru really only has relationships with Burnham and Tilly that I have noticed, and in the books, most of his crewmates don't really know and or like him. To me, this character isn't ready for the big chair. One thing Christopher Pike has shown us in season 2 is it really matters who sits in the captain's chair.
That's true.
Yeah. Excited to watch Disco stick the landing in the finale and solidify Star Trek Discovery season 2 as the best season 2 of all Trek series. Wow. The best. That's big words.
Well, I would say. I mean, he is only saying the best season 2.
Right. I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's significant.
Yeah.
I think. This season 2 was setting to rights everything that idiot did in season 1 wrong. Not that season 1 was wrong, but that there were a lot of wrong things in season 1.
Who are you proclaiming that idiot?
I'm going to let each person decide for themselves.
I think there's multiple.
That's right.
But I still believe that Brian Fuller made a lot of these decisions and he's the guy. You know, so that's a point that I would say. Now, Michelle Yeoh is supposed to be in season 3. So that has been mentioned by Kurtzman and Heather Caden a couple of times, who's like I don't think she gets involved in story, but she's like, you know, like an operational executive producer, making sure like everyone is, all the trains are on time kind of thing is what she does from like making sure the writers are there, making sure the all the budgets are there and all that stuff, like the operations kind of stuff or financial kind of stuff she does. And I've heard Kurtzman mention that Michelle Yeoh will be back in season 3, spoiler. So, but we don't know what that means.
Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that I do want to see if they can get the escape artist part in there, because I want to be able to say,
if I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
Sipping jippers on a beach somewhere. Yep. Sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
Delicious jipper.
Yep.
Delicious jipper.
Yep.
That episode was pretty outstanding. That short trick, I should say.
So, Mike, you don't say who you're backing for captain. So I am curious about that. And I don't know. I tend to think that Saru would be a good choice. And certainly we're led to imply that it would be Saru, but we were led to imply that it would be Saru last season too. So until they said that there would be a new captain on Vulcan.
I think you mean infer.
That's what I meant to say. Yes. Infer, not imply.
I agree. I think that season 1 Saru would have been a crappy captain, but I think season 2 Saru, especially season 2 right now Saru, would be spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. But like you said, I think it is an in real life thing that is happening. And, you know, maybe this would have been defined had they announced who the co-showrunner would be. And let's we mentioned it at the time when it was announced, but I totally understand why it's not Kurtzman as a sole showrunner, because he's got a lot to do right now. He's making a universe for us. He's what will make us getting the promise of year-round Star Trek to be a possibility. And I think that he's going about things the way that they haven't done things correctly with AMC and The Walking Dead stuff. Because I don't know, Ruthie, if you heard the announcement, but they've announced a third series.
A what?
There's a third Walking Dead series that's been announced just this past week.
Oh, that's fine for them.
I don't think that they've done it correctly, simply because they waited too long to do it. And I think CBS and Kurtzman and the powers that be are doing a masterful job at a point where I think Discovery's popularity is going up by leaps and bounds. And a lot of the people that were so much against season one are adoring season two. So this is the perfect time to be expanding things, and you know, I couldn't be happier about it. I think that's it for our listener feedback. All right. So as far as other notes, I just have one, so I'm going to go with it. And because I think pretty much we've said everything that I wanted to say. I noticed in Burnham and Jet Reno's interactions with the crystal, a photon torpedo is attached to Enterprise's hull is common between them. And I'm wondering, what's the deal there? Why is that significant? And what will that mean? And why did that torpedo suddenly show up? Is that something that was released another way? Or does that have Spock on board?
I noticed that too. And I wrote down, Jet is seeing the same thing as Michael did. So does that mean whatever they're doing didn't work?
I don't know.
That was the whole reason why she was like, stop, it won't work, because of the whole...
Well, and the fact that she got killed.
Well, yeah, that too. That's also, you know,
yeah,
kind of a bummer deal there. But I don't know. I'm like, so I'm wondering, does that mean that's, you know, whatever, whatever.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing I could, we kind of hinted at it, but I am really curious as to Tyler and what he's about to do. I did like, he was up front and said, look, I got to go do this thing. Trust me. It's kind of a callback to what Burnham did in the pilot, which was, remember the Klingons show up and she says, you know, permission to leave the bridge. And George was like, what? It was basically to go contact Sarek. And it makes me remind me a little bit of that. Something is going to happen that we don't know about, but I have to think it's Klingons, or he's going to do something to shut down Section 31 or bring the subspace relays back up or something. But my gut feeling is the Klingons are going to be involved. That's my thought. What are your thoughts about Tyler?
I'm not sure, but I kind of feel like he's going to do something about Section 31. Yeah. Based on what he said about, like, what he said to her about Section 31.
Yeah.
So,
which is why, which is why he couldn't go with her, because he had to make sure that this could never happen again.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. All right. That's about all that I have. An amazing episode. Not perfect. Like I said, there were some seams there that I could see where they tried to stretch out the episode. But in general, an amazing episode, probably the best, maybe the best of Discovery, even though I did give 1 of 10 technically.
Yeah.
But I'd say probably the best episode so far. What about you? What do you have?
I agree. I think that's kind of the best episode so far. I don't know. I feel like everything that people were complaining about, I was like, but I loved that. Like, I love the fact that Sarek and Amanda came all that way just to say goodbye to her. I mean, come on. If that's not love, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, there were some things that I could nitpick and things that I could kind of question, but the whole is better than the sum of its parts. So as a whole, you got to love the episode, even with some things you got to question. It's like still an amazing episode. So
yeah, I agree with that, too.
I liked Captain Pike was back in his Enterprise uniform.
Yes.
I thought, oh, that's so cool. He's back in his.
he is quite handsome in that uniform.
I have to agree with
a guy crush kind of thing, you know.
No, man crush.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you. He's quite fetching. I liked how, I don't know who said it, but someone said, how will you find your way back? And then crickets. I was like, I won't. So that was kind of like, well, you know, about that. I like the fact that there are actually two Red Angels, which makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
If she doesn't know anything about those signals, then obviously there has to be someone else who's doing it. And to whomever said, how did they get the specs? I'm pretty sure they got the specs beforehand. That's how they figured all that stuff out, because they were, before Leland got taken over by Control, they were in cahoots with figuring stuff out. And I think that's when they figured out that the whole Red Angel thing was a thing, because, I mean, you remember that episode when they were like, wait, what? This is real?
Yeah.
Or wait, what? This is us? We're doing this? So I think, I'm pretty sure that that's when they got the uniform specs. I think that's what I would imagine anyway.
Gotcha.
I suppose if I had to add a hold your horses, it would be, of course, auto-destruct failed.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that at the time, but I was like, man, why? And, you know, Michael, oh, we should have anticipated this. Yeah, you kind of should have. I mean, hello. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much all I've got.
Okay.
I can't really think of anything else other than the fact that, like everyone else, I was excited that Tig was back. Yay! And I really want her to be in season 3 as well. Oh, I have one more thing to say. I don't know why, but this always kind of freaked me out. Stamets's eyes, they kind of look all black. Like, I know that they're like blue, but the blue is sometimes so dark that his eyeballs just look all completely black. And sometimes I look at him and I think, demon!
Stamets?
Yes! Have you ever looked at his eyes and thought that they looked all the same color?
I hadn't really noticed. I mean, mainly when I notice him, I see how very blonde, almost albino he is, which I know his Twitter handle is Albino Kid.
Yeah, he's definitely very blonde.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe that's what makes his eyeballs seem, because his eyeballs are not very light blue like you might expect. They're kind of dark blue. And sometimes in some scenes, the dark blue looks all the way dark. And I'm just, the way that you look, it's kind of like when you look at a hologram thing and you hold it a certain way and it looks one way, and you hold it a different way and it looks a different way.
Yeah.
It's kind of how his eyeballs, sometimes they look black when you're looking at him a certain way. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? But I mean, that's really a funny sidebar thing that has nothing to do with anything except for the fact that I noticed it again this episode. So I thought I'd bring it up.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not. That's all. I really like this episode. I can't wait for next week. I'm super excited. And I, once again, will reiterate, I really, really, really want them to go to the future. Please. Please. Okay.
What do you really think?
I feel like I've been quite clear on that up to this point.
Yes. That's what you think. Anyway. Computerized. All right, so let's go to shipwide announcements. I don't really have much. Just that on expecting us to get Picard news, but we don't have any. I wonder if that will change for our next episode, but we'll see. But the Ready Room has Michelle Paradise, who was one of the writers of this episode and will be co-showrunner. I just looked her up to see, you know, what her background is. And I guess she's an ex-actress. I guess she's not acting anymore, but she was actually an actress and starred in a show on the Logo Channel called X's and O's. And it's like something that she created and ran. It was a 30-minute show. So I think it might have been a comedy. But one thing's for sure, listening to her on The Ready Room, she's very funny. So I think she's gonna bring certainly a comedy grasp on things. So I think that was very much lacking last season, and we definitely see more comedic elements this season. So I think that's good. But her other background, she was involved in the Originals. I don't know if you watched that show or not.
I did.
Yeah. And she's been a writer on, she's got a TV movie coming out called Saving Alex. I don't know much about that, but.
Me neither.
Yeah. So anyway, she's involved with that. I don't know. She wrote a lot of episodes on the Originals. So 15 episodes on the Originals. So, yeah. All right. This looks like it'll be her first show running example, except for probably the X's and O's. So it doesn't say that on the Wikipedia article, but I assume that that's the case because she was the creator and the star. So pretty much probably her thing. All right. So that's all that I've got. So Ruthie, why don't you tell people how they can contact us?
Alrighty. To submit your theories and feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com. You can submit text or audio there, or you can use the SpeakPipe widget. You can also call us at 304-837-2278. You can email us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com, or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. Or you can tweet us at StarTrekGSM.
A great way to support us is by subscribing to us in the podcast client of choice. If you use Apple Podcasts, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple, and that will take you to all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. And there are several going on. Is it Entering the Fifth Dimension, I believe, is the name of the Twilight Zone podcast that is going on right now for the new Twilight Zone series, also on CBS All Access. So I still don't know where it is on internationally, or if it is on internationally. But anyway, if you get it, it's there. Have you watched it at all yet?
Not yet.
See, I've seen the first two episodes and part of the third, and it's pretty good. I mean, I don't know if it's at classic levels yet, but I thought the first couple of episodes were pretty good. The second one better than the first. Anyway, if you are in Apple Podcasts, we would appreciate a rating, a review. It's been a few weeks since we've gotten one. So all of you that are members of the Facebook group, leave us a rating review in Apple Podcasts. That's your homework. So if you haven't already done so. Anyway, share and retweet us, especially retweet on Twitter. That is a good way to help get the word out. And I've also been, you know, posting our episodes when they come up on other Facebook groups. So if you hear this because of that, go to our regular Facebook group, which Ruthie mentioned a minute or so ago, and join us there, and you can be a part of our community. Other ways you can support this Golden Spiral Media Network can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And you can also hear me on the Walking Dead talkthrough, which is on hiatus until Fear the Walking Dead comes back. But yeah, I'm going to just kind of not do any episodes in between. I need a break. Yeah, no more two shows at the same time. So,
word.
Yeah. Okay, so our next episode is Season 2, Episode 14, which we think is titled Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, but I have no confirmation of that at all. And we do know that it was directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. We know that because that was mentioned on the Ready Room, and we think it was written by the same writers of this episode, Michelle Paradise and Jenny Lamette and Alex Kurtzman, but we don't know for sure. We don't have a description, but the info that we have is it's the season finale, which I hate that.
What? Why? Oh, but it's, the season finale.
Yeah, just I'm gonna miss this show. I'm gonna miss this show, but I'll be probably watching it.
Me too.
In a loop from now until season 3. All right. I don't have any predictions except to say I think it's going to be a great season finale. I can't wait to see how they wrap this up. I've been told that it's going to be amazing. She said on the Ready Room that she can't wait to see what people think of it, and that pretty much everyone was blown away by everything on it. The special effects, the story, the acting, everything is just, everybody's brought, she said, everybody's brought their A++++ game. So, and maybe another plus in there. So, I can't wait. Until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.